13. If you wonder what San Francisco would have looked like had there been no earthquake and fire, you can find out by going to Seattle. It's an old seaport town built on hills with windy canyon-type streets. Nothing is modern except the public library, and in the slum part, you'll see cobblestone and red brick, like parts of Pocatello, Idaho. The slums extend for miles and are rat-infested. In the center of Seattle, there is a prosperous, genuine city-like shopping area built near one or two great old hotels, such as the Olympus. The wind blows in from Canada, and when the Boeing 900 sets down at the SeaTac airfield, you catch a glimpse of the mountains of origin. They're frightening. I took a limousine into Seattle proper from the airport, since it cost only $5. The lady driver crept at snail's pace through traffic for miles until at last we had reached the Olympus Hotel. It's much like any good big city hotel, with its arcade of shops below ground level. It has all services which a hotel must have, and the service is excellent. There are several dining rooms. In fact, you're in a dark, yellow-lit world of your own at a big city hotel. A world made up of carpets and ancient varnished wood, people well-dressed and always talking. Corridors and elevators, plus maids cleaning constantly. In my room, I turned down the wired music in preference to the TV set, peeped out the window at the street far below, adjusted the ventilation and the heat, took off my shoes, and padded about on the wall-to-wall carpeting, then opened my suitcase and began to unpack. Only an hour ago, I had been in Boise. Now here I was on the West Coast, almost at the Canadian border. It beat driving. I'd gone from one large city directly to another without having to endure the countryside in between. Nothing could have pleased me more. You can tell a good hotel by the fact that when you have any sort of room service, the hotel employee, when he enters, never looks at you. He looks down, through, and beyond you. You stay invisible, which is what you want, even if you're in your shorts or naked. The employee comes in very quietly. Leaves your pressed shirt or your tray of food or newspaper or drink. You hand him the money. He makes a murmuring thank you noise, and he goes. It is almost Japanese, the way they don't stare. You feel as if no one had been in your room ever, even the previous guest. It is absolutely yours. Even when you meet up with cleaning women in the hall outside, they, the hotel people, have such absolute respect for your privacy. It's uncanny. Of course, when it's time to settle up at the desk at the end, you pay for all that. It costs you $50 instead of $20. But don't ever let anyone tell you it isn't worth it. A person on the brink of a psychotic breakdown could be restored by a few days in an authentic first-class hotel with its 24-hour room service and shops. Believe me. By the time I'd been in my room at the Olympus for a couple of hours, I wondered why I had ever felt agitated enough to make the trip in the first place. I felt as if I were on a well-deserved vacation and rest. I could have lived there, eating the hotel food, shaving and showering in my private bathroom, reading the paper, shopping in the shops, until my money ran out. But nonetheless, I'd come on business. That's what's so hard, to leave the hotel, to get out on those drafty, windy, cold gray sidewalks and hobble along on your errand. That's where the pain enters. You're back in a world where no one holds the door for you. You stand on the corner with other people equal to yourself, all as good as you, waiting for the lights to change. And once again, you're an ordinary, suffering individual, prey to any passing ailment. It's a sort of birth trauma all over again. But at least you can finally scuttle back to the hotel once your business is done. And, by using the phone in the hotel room, you can conduct some of your business without stirring outside at all. You do as much as you can that way. It's instinct to do that. In fact, you try to get people to come and see you there, rather than the other way. This time my business could not be conducted within the hotel, however. I did not bother to make the try. I simply put it off as long as I could. I spent the rest of the day in my room, and at nightfall, I went downstairs to the bar, and then one of the dining rooms. And after that, I strolled about the arcade and into the lobby, and then back among the shops once more. I loitered wherever I could loiter, without having to step outdoors into the cold, brisk, Canadian-type night. All this time, I had the .38 in my inside coat pocket. It was strange, coming on an illegal errand. Perhaps I could have done it all legally, through Lincoln, found a way of getting Pris out of Barrow's hands. But on some deep level, I enjoyed this, coming up here to Seattle with a gun in my suitcase and now in my coat. I liked the feeling of being alone, knowing no one, about to go out and confront Mr. Sam Barrows with no one to help me. It was like an epic or an old Western TV play. I was this stranger in town, armed and with a mission. Meanwhile, I drank at the bar, went back up to my room, lay on the bed, read the newspapers, looked at TV, ordered hot coffee from the room service at midnight. I was on top of the world. If only it could last. Tomorrow morning, I'll go look up Barrows, I said to myself. This must end, but not quite yet. And then, it was about 12:30 at night, and I was getting ready to go to bed. It occurred to me, why don't I phone Barrows right now? Wake him up, like the Gestapo used to. Not tell him where I am, just say, I'm coming, Sam. Put a real scare in him. He'll be able to tell by the nearness of my voice that I'm somewhere in town. Neat. I'd had a couple of drinks. Heck, I'd had 6 or 7. I dialed and told the operator. Give me Sam K. Barrows. I don't know the number. It was the hotel operator, and she did so. Presently, I heard Sam's phone ringing. To myself, I practiced what I was going to say. Give Pris back to R&R Associates, I would tell him. I hate her, but she belongs with us. She's life itself as far as we're concerned. The phone rang on and on. Obviously, no one was home, or no one was up and going to answer. Finally, I hung up the receiver. What a hell of a situation for grown men to be in, I said to myself as I roamed aimlessly around my hotel room. How could something on the order of Pris begin to represent life itself to us, as I was going to tell Sam Barrows? Are we that warped? Are we warped at all? Isn't that nothing but an indication of the nature of life, not of ourselves? Yes, it's not our fault life's like that. We didn't invent it. Or did we? And so on. I must have spent a couple of hours roaming about, with nothing more on my mind than such indistinct preoccupations. I was in a terrible state. It was like a virus flu, a kind that attacks the metabolism of the brain, the next state from death. Or anyhow, so it seemed to me during that interval. I had lost all contact with healthy, normal reality, even that of the hotel. I had forgotten room service, the arcade of shops, the bars, and the dining rooms. I even gave up, for a while, stopping by the window of the room to look out at the lights and deep, illuminated streets. That's a form of dying, that losing contact with a city like that. At 1 o'clock, while I was still pacing around the room, the phone rang. Hello? I said into it. It was not Sam K. Barrows. It was Maury, calling me from Ontario. How did you know I'd be at the Olympus? I asked. I was totally baffled. It was as if he had used some occult power to track me down. I knew you were in Seattle, you moron. How many big hotels are there? I knew you'd want the best. I bet you've got the bridal suite and some dame there with you and you're going at it like mad. Listen, I came here to kill Sam K. Barrows. With what? Your hard head? You're gonna run at him and butt him in the stomach and rupture him to death? I told Maury about the .38 pistol. Listen, buddy, Maury said in a quiet voice. If you do that, all of us are ruined. I said nothing. This call is costing us plenty, Maury said. So I'm not going to spend an hour pleading with you like those pastors. You get some sleep and tomorrow call me back. You promise? Promise, or I'll call the Seattle Police Department and have you arrested in your room. So help me God. No, I said. You have to promise. I said, okay, Maury, I promise not to do anything tonight. How could I? I had tried and failed already. I was just pacing around. Good enough. Listen, Louis, this won't get Pris back. I already thought about it. It'll only wreck her life if you go over there and blast away at the guy. Think about it, and I know you'll see. Don't you imagine I'd do it if I thought it would work? I shook my head. I don't know. My head ached, and I felt bone weary. I just want to go to bed. Okay, buddy. You get your rest. Listen, I want you to look around the room. You see if there isn't a table with drawers of some sort, right? Look in the top drawer. Go on, Louis. Do it right now while I'm on the phone. Look in it.
For what?
There's a Bible there. That society puts it there.
I slammed the phone down.
The bastard, I said to myself, giving me advice like that. I wished I had not come to Seattle at all. I was like the Stanton simulacrum, like a machine propelling itself forward into a universe it did not comprehend, searching Seattle for a familiar corner in which it could perform its customary act. In the Stanton's case, opening a law office. In my case, what in my case? Trying somehow to reestablish a familiar environment, however unpleasant? I was used to Pris and her cruelty. I had even begun to get used to expect to encounter Sam K. Barrows and his doxy and his attorney. My instincts were propelling me from the unfamiliar back to the known. It was the only way I could operate. It was like a blind thing flopping along in order to spawn. I know what I want, I said to myself. I want to join the Sam K. Barrows organization. I want to be a part of it, like Pris. I don't want to shoot him at all.
I'm going over to the other side.
There must be a place for me, I told myself. Maybe not doing the lunar fling. I'm not after that. I don't want to go on TV. I'm not interested in seeing my name in lights. I just want to be useful. I want to have my abilities made use of by the big cheese. Picking up the phone, I asked the operator for Ontario, Oregon. I got the operator at Ontario and gave her Maury's home phone number. The phone rang, and then Maury sleepily answered.
What did you do, go to bed?
I asked. Listen, Maury, I had to tell you this. It's right you should know. I'm going over to the other side. I'm joining up with Barrows and the hell with you and my dad and Chester and the Stanton, which is a dictator anyhow and would make life unendurable for us. The only one I regret doing this to is Lincoln, but if he's so all-wise and understanding, he'll understand and forgive, like Christ.
Pardon? Maury said.
He did not seem to comprehend me.
I sold out, I said.
No, Maury said. You're wrong.
How can I be wrong? What do you mean I'm wrong?
If you go over to Barrows, there won't be any R&R associates, so there won't be anything to sell out. We'll simply fold, buddy. You know that.
He sounded perfectly calm.
Isn't that a fact?
Well, I don't give a damn. I just know that Pris is right. You can't meet a man like Sam Barrows and then forget you met him. He's a star. He's a comet. You either tag along in his wake or you cease for all intents and purposes to exist. It's an emotional hunger inside me. Irrational, but it's real. It's an instinct. It'll hit you, too, one of these days. He's got magic. Without him, we're snails. What's the purpose of life, anyhow? To drag along in the dust? You don't live forever. If you can't raise yourself up to the stars, you're dead. You know the .38 pistol I have with me? If I can't make it with the Barrows organization, I'm going to blow my goddamn brains out. I'm not going to be left behind. The instincts inside a person, instincts to live, are too strong.
Maury was silent, but I could hear him there at the other end.
Listen, I said, I'm sorry to wake you up, but I had to tell you. You're mentally ill, Maury said. I'm going to call Dr. Horstowski.
What for?
Have him call you there at your hotel.
Okay, I said. I'll get off the line. I hung up then. I sat on the bed waiting, and sure enough, not 20 minutes later, at about 1:30 in the morning, the phone rang once more.
Hello?
I said into it, a far-off voice.
This is Milton Horstowski.
Louis Rosen, doctor.
Mr. Rock called me.
A long pause.
How are you feeling, Mr. Rosen? Mr. Rock said you seemed upset about something.
Listen, you government employee, I said. This is no business of yours. I had a beef with my partner, Maury Rock, and that's it. I'm now in Seattle on my way to linking up with a much bigger and more progressive organization. You recall my mentioning Sam K. Barrows?
I know who he is.
Is that so crazy?
No, Dr. Horstowski said. Not on the face of it.
I told that about the gun to Maury just to get his goat. It's late and I'm a little stewed. Sometimes when you break up a partnership, it's hard psychologically.
I waited, but Horstowski said nothing.
I guess I'll turn in now. Maybe when I get back to Boise, I'll drop in and see you. This is all very hard on me. Pris went and joined the Barrows organization, you know.
Yes, I know. I'm still in touch with her.
She's quite a girl, I said. I'm beginning to think I'm in love with her. Could that be? I mean, a person of my psychological type?
It's possible.
Well, I guess that's probably what's happened. I can't live without Pris, so that's why I'm in Seattle. But I still say I made that up about the gun. You can quote me to Maury to that effect, if it'll calm him. I was just trying to show him I'm serious. You get it?
Yes, I think so, Dr. Horstowski said.
We talked on to no point for a while longer, and then he rang off. As soon as I had hung up, I said to myself, the guy'll probably phone the Seattle police or the FBMH here. I can't take the chance. He just might. So I began packing my things as fast as I could. I got everything into the suitcase, and then I left the room. I took the elevator downstairs to the main floor, and at the desk, I asked for my bill.
You weren't displeased with anything, were you, Mr. Rosen?
The night clerk asked me as the girl computed the charges.
Nah, I said. I managed to contact the person I came here to meet, and he wants me to spend the night at his place.
I paid the bill. It was quite moderate, and then called a taxi. The doorman carried my suitcase out and stuffed it in the trunk of the cab. I tipped him a couple of dollars, and a moment later, the cab shot out into the surprisingly dense traffic. When we passed a likely-looking modern motel, I took note of the location. I had the cab stop a few blocks beyond it, paid the driver, and then on foot, walked back. I told the motel owner that my car had broken down. I was driving through Seattle on business, and I registered under the name James W. Byrd, a name I made up on the spot. I paid in advance, $18.50, and then, with the motel key in my hand, set off for room 6. It was pleasant, clean and bright, just what I wanted. I had once turned in and was soon sound asleep. They won't get me now, I remember saying to myself as I drifted off. I'm safe. And tomorrow, I'll get hold of Sam Barrows and give him the news that I'm coming over. And then, I remember thinking, I'll be back with Pris again. I'll get in on her rise to fame. I'll be there to see the whole thing. Maybe we'll get married. I'll tell her how I feel about her, that I'm in love with her. She's probably twice as beautiful now as she was before, now that Barrows has gotten hold of her. And if Barrows competes with me, I'll wipe him out of existence. I'll atomize him with methods hitherto unglimpsed. He won't stand in my way. I'm not kidding. Thinking that, I drifted off. The sun woke me at 8 o'clock, shining in on me and the bed and the room. I had not pulled the curtains. Cars parked in a row outside gleamed and reflected the sun. It looked like a nice day. What had I thought the night before? My thoughts, while going to sleep, came back to me. Nutty, wild thoughts. All about marrying Pris and killing Sam Barrows. Kids' thoughts. When you're going to sleep, you revert to childhood. No doubt of it. I felt ashamed. And yet, basically, I stuck to my position. I had come to get Pris, and if Barrows tried to stand in my way, too bad for him. I had run amok, but I did not intend to back down. Sanity prevailed, now that it was daylight. I padded into the bathroom and took a long, cold shower. But even the light of day did not dispel my deep convictions. I just worked them about until they were more rational, more convincing, more practical. First, I had to approach Barrows in the proper manner. I had to conceal my actual feelings, my real motive. I had to hide anything to do with Pris. I would tell him that I wanted to go to work for him, maybe help design the simulacrum, bring all the knowledge and experience I had built up from my years with Maury and Jerome. But no hint about Pris, because if he caught even the slightest note, there... You're shrewd, Sam K. Barrows, I said to myself, but you can't read my mind, and it won't show on my face. I'm too experienced, too much a professional to give myself away. As I dressed, tying my tie, I practiced in front of the mirror. My face was absolutely impassive. No one would have guessed that inside me, my heart was being gnawed away, eaten at by the worm of desire. Love for Pris Frauenzimmer, or womankind, or whatever she called herself now. That's what's meant by maturity, I said to myself as I sat on the bed shining my shoes. Being able to conceal your real feelings, being able to erect a mask, being able even to fool a big man like Barrows. If you can do that, you've made it. Otherwise, you're finished. The whole secret's there. There was a phone in the motel room. I went out and had breakfast. Ham and eggs, toast, coffee, everything, including juice. Then at 9:30, I returned to my motel room and got out the Seattle phone book. I spent a good long time examining the listings of Barrow's various enterprises until I found the one at which I thought he would be. I then dialed.
Northwest Electronics, the girl said brightly. Good morning.
Is Mr. Barrows in yet?
Yes, sir, but he's on the other phone.
I'll wait, the girl said brightly.
I'll give you his secretary.
A long pause, and then another voice, also a woman's, but much lower and older sounding.
Mr. Barrows' office, who's calling, please?
I said. I'd like an appointment to see Mr. Barrows. This is Louis Rosen. I flew into Seattle from Boise last night. Mr. Barrows knows me.
Just a moment.
A long pause, then the woman again.
Mr. Barrows will speak with you now. Go ahead, sir.
Hello? I said. Hello. Barrows' voice came in my ear. How are you, Rosen? What can I do for you? He sounded cheerful. How's Pris? I said, taken by surprise to find myself actually speaking to him. Pris is fine. How are your father and brother?
Fine.
That must be interesting, to have a brother whose face is on upside down. I wish I could have met him. Why don't you drop by for a moment while you're here in Seattle, around 1 this afternoon?
Around 1, I said.
Okay, thanks, and bye-bye.
Barrows,
I said, are you going to marry Pris? There was no answer.
I'm going to shoot you, I said.
Aw, for God's sake.
Sam, I've got a Japanese-made, all-transistorized, encephalotropic, floating anti-personnel mine in my possession.
That was how I was thinking of my .38 pistol.
And I'm going to release it in the Seattle area. Do you know what that means?
No, not exactly. Encephalotropic, doesn't that have something to do with the brain?
Yes, Sam, your brain. Maury and I recorded your brain pattern when you were at our office in Ontario. That was a mistake on your part to go there. The mine will seek you out and detonate. Once I release it, there's no holding it back. It's curtains for you.
Oh, for God's sake.
Pris is in love with me, I said. She told me one night when she drove me home. Get away from her or you're finished. You know how old she is? You want to know?
18. I slammed down the phone. I'm going to kill him, I said to myself. I really am. He's got my girl. God knows what he's doing with her and to her. Dialing the phone once more, I got the same bright-voiced switchboard operator.
Northwest Electronics, good morning.
I was just talking to Mr. Barrows.
Oh, were you cut off? I'll put you through again, sir. Just a moment.
Well, tell Mr. Barrows, I said to her, that I'm coming to get him with my advanced technology. Will you tell him that? Goodbye.
Once more, I hung up. He'll get the message, I said to myself. Maybe I should have told him to bring Pris over here, or something like that. Would he do that, to save his hide? God damn you, Barrows. I know he would do that, I said to myself. He'd give her up to save himself. I could get her back any time. She didn't mean that much to him. She was just another pretty young woman to him. I was the only one really in love with her for what she actually, uniquely was. Once more, I dialed.
Northwest Electronics, good morning.
Put me through to Mr. Barrows again, please.
A series of clicks.
Miss Wallace, Mr. Barrows' secretary, who is calling?
This is Louis Rosen. Let me talk to Sam again.
A pause.
Just a moment, Mr. Rosen.
I waited.
Hello, Louis.
Sam Barrow's voice. Well, you're really stirring up things, aren't you? He chuckled. I called the army arsenal down the coast, and there really is such a thing as an encephalotropic mine. How'd you get a hold of one? I'll bet you don't have one, really.
Turn Pris over to me, I said, and I'll spare you.
Come on, Rosen.
I'm not spoofing.
My voice shook.
You think this is a game? I'm at the end of my rope. I'm in love with her, and nothing else matters to me.
Jesus Christ.
Will you do that?
I yelled.
Or do I have to come and get you?
My voice broke. I was screeching.
I've got all kinds of service weapons here with me, from when I was overseas. I mean business.
In the back of my mind, a calm part of me thought, the bastard will give her up. I know what a coward he is. Barrow said, calm down.
Okay, I'm coming to get you, and with all the technological improvements at my disposal.
Now listen, Rosen. I suppose Maury Rock egged you into this. I talked it over with Dave, and he assured me that the statutory rape charge has no meaning if...
I'll kill you if you raped her!
I screamed into the phone. And in the back of my mind, the calm, sardonic voice was smirking and saying, that's giving it to the bastard. The calm, sardonic voice laughed delightedly. It was having a grand time.
You hear me?
I screamed. Presently, Barrow said, you're psychotic, Rosen. I'm going to call Maury. At least he's sane. Look, I'll call him and tell him Pris is flying back to Boise.
When?
I screamed. Today, but not with you. And I think you should see a government psychiatrist. You're very ill.
Okay,
I said more quietly.
Today, but I'm staying here until Maury calls me and says she's in Boise.
I hung up then. Wow. I tottered away from the phone, went into the bathroom, and washed my face with cold water. So behaving in an irrational and uncontrolled manner paid off. What a thing to learn at my age. I had gotten Pris back. I had scared him into believing I was a madman. And wasn't that actually the truth? I really was out of my head. Look at my conduct. The loss of Pris had driven me insane. After I had calmed down, I returned to the phone and called Maury at the factory in Boise.
Pris is coming back. You call me as soon as she arrives. I'll stay here. I scared Barrows. I'm stronger than he is.
Maury said,
I'll believe it when I see her.
The man's terrified of me. Petrified. He couldn't wait to get her off his hands. You don't realize what a raving maniac I was turned into by the terrible stress of this situation.
I gave him the phone number of the motel.
Did Horstowski call you last night?
Yes,
I said.
But he's incompetent. You wasted all that money, as you said. I've got nothing but contempt for him, and when I get back, I'm going to tell him so.
I admire your cool poise,
Maury said.
You're right to admire it. My cool poise, as you call it, got Pris back. Maury, I'm in love with her.
After a long silence, Maury said,
listen, she's a child.
I mean to marry her. I'm not another Sam Barrows.
I don't care who or what you are.
Now Maury was yelling.
You can't marry her. She's a baby. She has to go back to school. Get away from my daughter, Louie. We're in love. You can't come between us. Call me as soon as she sets foot in Boise. Otherwise, I'm going to give it to Sam K. Barrows and maybe her and myself, if I have to.
Louie?
Maury said in a slow, careful voice.
You need Federal Bureau of Mental Health help. Honest to God, you do. I wouldn't let Pris marry you for all the money on earth, or for any other reason. I wish you had let things lie. I wish you hadn't gone to Seattle. I wish you was staying with Barrows. Yes, better Pris should be with Barrows than you. What can you give her? Look at all the things Sam Barrows can give a girl.
He made her into a prostitute. That's what he gave her.
I don't care,
Maury shouted.
That's just talk, a word, nothing more. You get back here to Boise. Our partnership is off. You have to get out of R&R Associates. I'm calling Sam Barrows and telling him I have nothing to do with you. I want him to keep Pris.
God damn you,
I said.
You, as my son-in-law, You think I gave birth to her, in a manner of speaking, so she could marry you? What a laugh. You're absolutely nothing. Get out of here.
Too bad, I said. But I felt numb.
I want to marry her,
I repeated.
Did you tell Pris you're going to marry her?
No, not yet.
She'll spit in your face.
So what?
So what? So who wants you? Who needs you? Just your defective brother Chester and your senile father. I'm talking to Abraham Lincoln and finding out how to end our relationship forever.
The phone clicked. He had hung up on me. I could not believe it. I sat on the unmade bed, staring at the floor. So Maury, like Pris, was after the big time, the big money. Bad blood, I said to myself, carried by the genes. I should have known. She had to get it somewhere. What do I do now? I asked myself. Blow my brains out and make everyone happy? They can do fine without me, like Maury said. But I did not feel like doing that. The cold, calm voice inside me, the instinctive voice, said no. Fight them all, it said. Take them all on. Pris and Maury, Sam Barrows, Stanton, the Lincoln. Stand up and fight. What a thing to find out about your partner, how he really feels about you, how he looks at you secretly. God, what a dreadful thing. The truth. I'm glad I found out, I said to myself. No wonder he threw himself into the Civil War soldier babysitter simulacrum. He was glad his daughter had gone off to be Sam K. Barrow's mistress. He was proud. He read that Marjorie Morningstar, too. Now, I know what makes the world up, I said to myself. I know what people are like, what they prize in this life. It's enough to make you drop down dead right on the spot, or at least go and commit yourself. But I won't give up, I said to myself. I want Pris, and I'm going to get her away from Maury and Sam Barrows and all the rest of them. Pris is mine. She belongs to me. I don't care what she or they or anybody else thinks. I don't care what evil prize of this world they're busy hungering after. All I know is what my instinctive inner voice says. It says, get Pris Frauenzimmer away from them and marry her. She was destined from the start to be Mrs. Louis Rosen of Ontario, Oregon. That was my vow. Picking up the phone, I once more dialed.
Northwest Electronics, good morning.
Give me Mr. Barrows again. This is Louis Rosen. A pause. Then the deeper-voiced woman.
Miss Wallace.
Let me talk to Sam.
Mr. Barrows has gone out. Who's calling?
This is Louis Rosen. Tell Mr. Barrows to have Miss Frauenzimmer.
Who?
Miss Womankind, then. Tell Barrows to send her over to my motel in a taxi. I gave her the address, reading it from the door key. Tell him not to put her on a plane for Boise. Tell him if he doesn't, I'm coming in there and get her. There was silence. Then Miss Wallace said,
I can't tell him anything because he's not here. He went home. He honestly did.
I'll call him at home then. Give me his number. In a squeaky voice, Miss Wallace gave me the phone number. I knew it already. I had called it the night before. I jiggled the hook and called that number. Pris answered the phone. This is Louis, I said. Louis Rosen.
For goodness sakes,
Pris said, taken by surprise.
Where are you? You sound so close.
She seemed nervous. I'm here in Seattle. I flew in by TWA last night. I'm here to rescue you from Sam Barrows.
Oh, my God.
Listen, Pris, stay where you are. I'm driving right on over, okay? You understand?
Oh, no, Pris said. Louis.
Her voice became hard.
Wait, just a second. I talked to Horstowski this morning. He told me about you and your catatonic rampage. He warned me about you.
Tell Sam to put you in a cab and send you over here, I said.
I thought you were Sam calling.
If you don't come with me, I said, I'm going to kill you.
No, you're not,
she said in a hard, calm voice. She had regained her deadly cold poise.
You just try, you low-class creep.
I was stunned. Listen, I began.
You prole. You goofball. Drop dead. If you think you're going to horn in, I know all about what you're up to. You fat-assed fart-faces can't design your simulacrum without me, can you? So you want me back. Well, go to hell. And if you try to come around here, I'll scream you're raping me or killing me, and you'll spend the rest of your life in jail. So think about that.
She ceased then, but she did not hang up. I could hear her there. She was waiting, with relish, to hear what I had, if anything, to say.
I'm in love with you,
I told her.
Go take a flying fling. Oh, here's Sam at the door. Get off the phone, and don't call me Pris. My name's Pristine, Pristine Womankind. Go back to Boise and dabble with your poor little stunted second-rate simulacra as a favor to me, please.
Again she waited, and again I could think of nothing to say. Nothing, anyhow, that was worth saying.
Goodbye, you low-class, poor, ugly nothing,
Pris said in a matter-of-fact voice.
And please don't annoy me with phone calls in the future. Save it for some greasy woman who wants you to paw her, if you can manage to find one that greasy, ugly, and low-class.
This time the phone clicked. She had at last hung up, and I shook with relief. I trembled and quaked at having gotten off the phone and away from her, away from the calm, stinging, accusing, familiar voice. Pris, I thought, I love you. Why? What have I done to be driven toward you? What twisted instinct is it? I sat down on the bed and closed my eyes.